Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, just like a Murillo Crossfield ball. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Danilo's free.
First time we've seen them attack them, and that's Brandon! Well, that's what I wanted to see Robinson do!
Taylor won, he scores! And the City ground goes ballistic!
Here's Bob Williams. He's through here! And in the end, Forrest will say it doesn't matter how you play, as long as you win it!
Yeah!
Hello and welcome to Red Side Trent as Forest prepare to face West Ham this weekend in a rare 3 p.m. kickoff. To preview the game, our fellow Reds fans, Matt Barnsley and Elliot Bauer. Chaps, are we well? Elliot, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you. It's just an honour to be on this podcast. I listen to a lot, so thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening and being a regular contributor to it. Matt, are you well?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good to our boys. I'm very well. I hope you are too as well.
Yeah, all good, all good. So a recap before we get right into it, before we get into the West Ham game, just wanted each of your thoughts on the Newcastle game, actually, first of all. Matt, we'll start with yourself. What did you think of it? Just a brief overview.
I thought it was a pretty mixed bag, really. I thought the first 25 minutes was probably as ordinary as they've been all season. I thought they kind of gave Newcastle quite a lot of respect, and I think that was reflected in the amount of ball that they had. I know I mentioned to the lad I sat next to, the two centre-halves, there was just it was quite easy for them to play out and play through midfield and a bit of lack of press on our part. And then after we scored to equalise, I thought we kind of kicked into life a bit and the crowd got into it, but as I'm sure we'll go into it later today. I thought offensively, going forward, I thought we looked the part and we looked like it was coming together. But defensively, it was very schoolboy, particularly for the second and the third goal, which, to be honest with you, defending the manager, you can't legislate for what Alanga did and letting the ball bounce for the second goal. So, yeah, mixed bag, really. Plenty of positives, but they're shooting themselves in the foot for the same reasoning.
Leah, what's your thoughts on it?
Well, I can't really add on what Matt just said there. It's just echoed, really. If we are that good in attack, why are we just so bad in defence, particularly on like free kicks and stuff? It's, you know, like, surely enough we're better than this now. We can do all the we can stop all the naive defending regarding like free kicks and stuff. I think if we stop that, then, you know, we're onto something good, but right now it's just not happening, which is weird.
Yeah, it's for me, it's a lot of basic errors and whatnot. I mean, I've got something to ask you both actually about what's your thoughts about how we set up in set pieces in terms of zonal marking and then also I've noticed this about a lot of previous managers. We don't leave any players up to attack like if we ever win the ball. Elliot, starting with you.
Yeah, I'm usually in block P, and there was one guy behind me going absolutely barmy, like, why are we not leaving somebody like Taiwo, etc., like on, like for these kicks, like why are we not doing that? So yeah, I do sort of agree with you in a way, but obviously, of course, they're the ones to answer for these like free kick set piece like mistakes. They should start, you know, really learning this in training, and hopefully one day, particularly this West Ham game, which I'm terrified of James Ward-Prowse, you know, just banging some in for them. So the only thing I can say is just basically sort it out.
Sort it out. Fair enough, Matt. What's your take on it as a Forest fan? What is it, a pet peeve of yours, or do you think it should be better to you that you've got 11 men in the box?
I always think that, particularly with Taiwo's kind of presence up top, and particularly because he gives you that out ball, doesn't it? So if you defend your 18 yard box and you play the ball out, because his presence is so big and he's got the ability to hold the ball up and bring other players into play, it kind of, I never see the logic behind absolutely jam packing our 18 yard box from wide free kicks and corners, because you're basically, when you clear the ball, the opposition are guaranteed to recycle it straight away, and it just keeps that consistent pressure. So I don't see any logic. I see even less logic behind it, even more so at the moment, because they're packing the box with 11 players and they're still not defending balls into the penalty area. So it all kind of like devoids the point, really. But yeah, similar to what Elliot said, I find it very illogical.
Yeah, for me, leaving like Elanga and Hudson-Odoi would be more beneficial, I think, to us, because you're giving everyone else a 50-metre head start already once the goalkeeper's caught the ball. Do you know what I mean? Teams are leaving players back, sort of thing. And when you've got pace like we've got, and I mean, I don't expect Elanga or Callum Hudson-Odoi to go and attack a ball and win it from an aerial point of view. But
yeah, exactly. That's what I was just about to say. Like, just like leave Elanga up, because, you know, he's not really doing much in the box, but you know how rapid his pace is. So yeah, I concur that.
Yeah, absolutely. What have you both made of Nuno since he's come in? Obviously, there's a lot of chat online saying we've only won 1 in 9, and well, majority of that's been, well, half of it's been the FA Cup. Thoughts? Let's start with you, Elliot.
Start us. Okay. There was another podcast, if you know Emily from another podcast, she does East Midlands Today. She summed it up perfectly regarding like Steve Cooper. You are allowed to love Steve Cooper and what he did for the club, but at the same time, you can be 100% behind Nuno. Now, we've seen Nuno's experience, like from like previous clubs. You know he's a good manager, but the thing is, he's got to work with what he's been given. So obviously, of course, he's had this sort of AFCON lark. He's had like X amount of injuries and some players being ineligible for some games. This is the kind of thing he's got to work with. This is not his team just yet, but just give him like X amount of more windows and we'll just see where he's at. But I want it to be a long-term thing where he's here for, well, the long term.
Yeah. Matt, anything to add?
Yeah, I'm pretty similar, really. I think it's been, I had a conversation with somebody who was sitting next to me the other day, and I think since the Man United game and the euphoria of that, I think we've, obviously because of AFCON, we've plugged gaps, really. I mean, I know fans might want to hear this, but I think the FA Cup's been a bit of an inconvenience. I think it's the least of the priorities this season, even more so with going into the unknown with FFP and potential points deduction. I'd even go as far as to say that the FA, I think the Man United game is probably a game we could do without. But I think one thing we've really struggled with since Nuno's been here is continuity. So, for example, I thought Sangara had his best game in a Forest shirt away at Newcastle on Boxing Day. And then he picked up a knock, and then he hasn't played since. And then I think with Nuno, I think his caliber in this league in terms of what he did, what kind of speaks for itself. But kind of, and I similar to Elliot, I believe it should be like the proper footballing cliche of the commodity of time. But I just think we need the continuity. We need the continuity back with players coming back from AFCON, which I think will settle us, and I think results will reflect that. But if I'm being critical, and I don't want to start going down kind of blind alleys with like, but going on to the continuity thing. So, for example, I know this is being said with a massive amount of hindsight, and I get that. But I went to the Bournemouth game, as did you, Wilco, on the Sunday, and Omodomabelli and Murillo, I thought, were phenomenal. And I thought we shuffled the pack again on Saturday night by putting Niakate back in there. So, and I think that I'm not saying that's the reasoning as to why certain mistakes were made, but I think with centre half partnerships, you've got to have that consistency, that continuity, and we're changing it every other game, which I don't think is helpful. But yeah, similar to what Elliot said, I think over a period of time, we get a settled team, hopefully stay injury free for the rest of the season, get a settled team, and I truly believe that results will start to come good for us.
Yeah,
I think. I was also going to reflect on the Omar Bamardelli and Murillo case. Those two against Arsenal, they did not deserve to lose that game, but it happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, those two were great. I like looking forward to the future with those two.
Yeah, or just to caveat what you said, Matt, is I think because against Man U and against Newcastle, Niakate and Murillo were so good together. Yeah, I guess Nuno's kind of was tempted by, well, let's get them back together because they were so good in the two games that I've actually won this season in the Premier League with Forest. And I guess that's probably what came into his thinking. I do think that Omar Bamardelli has been incredibly patient, been really good since he's come in as well. He looks very, very good prospect and definitely one for the future. I think all eyes are on Murillo, but I think there'll be a few maybe flittering eyes over at Omar Bamardelli as well in the future, but hopefully we can keep both of them for a decent amount of time. But we'll move on. Just want both your thoughts on rest of the season as well before we get into like West Ham more in depth. But the obvious defensive frailties we've actually quite good going forward this season, I think, especially under Nuno. We've scored in pretty much every game, I think. So had we won all of our 3-2 losses, we'd actually be sixth. So that kind of makes you sick to the stomach a little bit. Elliot, let's start with you. What do you think for the rest of the season? Do you think we'll stay up? Do you think it'll be, yeah?
Yeah, but I think it's going to be a sort of skin of the teeth kind of thing. Now, after the game against Newcastle, I was walking down the meadows and I had two complete negative Nellies come up to me going, oh, we're down now. Everything's rubbish. We signed 40 players. It's all this turnover, etc. But if you can remember, I think it was around March, April time, where against Leeds away and everybody thought we were done. And obviously, of course, we went on that really nice run after like Brighton at home. Like it's not over yet. We can't actually predict what's going to happen. Nobody can. So my take on that is, yes, we will stay up. It won't be pretty and it won't be comfortable. But I think we'll just sort of get over the line after the Chelsea game. That's my sort of prediction, really.
Fair enough, Matt.
Yeah, I think I'm still reasonably confident that they will have enough. I know it's the elephant in the room and it keeps going back to it. I think it's gonna be purely dependent on the severity of the points deduction. I think the initial, obviously, because we've known about the FFP stuff for 5 or 6 weeks, and obviously I think the probability of a points deduction of some form is probably very, very likely to happen. I'm not sure it'll be 10 points, but I think kind of the ideal thing in my mind was that we'll get 6 points, but in the interim, we're going to put a run together and kind of get some gap away from the bottom three, which hasn't transpired. But going on to what I stated before about getting AFCON players back and getting a settled team and results hopefully reflecting that. And I do think they've got some winnable games, particularly at Nottingham coming up in the second half of the season. I mean, every game in this league is tough, but they've got Wolves at Nottingham, Fulham at Nottingham, Crystal Palace at Nottingham. So they're still difficult games, but they're more likely to win those games than they are against Man City and Liverpool. Plus you throw into as well, Forest, there's one thing to learn since our season and a half in the Prem is Forest have been known to pull off results where you maybe might not expect them to. So I'm quietly confident that they will be able to have enough. But I suppose it's just kind of the severity of the challenge we don't know because of the unknown surrounding FFP, really.
Yeah, for me, I think the kind of tie lies in those away games against Everton, Burnley, Sheffield United and Luton as well. They're all big games as well. There's no easy games in this league. You kind of look and go, oh, yeah, that'll be a winner. And you never get there, do you?
Can I just interject on this point?
Of course you can.
Now I see a lot of this regarding like podcasters and other vloggers and stuff. They tend to like class like the likes of like Luton, etc., in and around us as like this potentially winnable game. And I'm just going to be a little bit in people's faces and say life's not like that. We tend to win games that aren't winnable, like Liverpool last year at home. The teams we've recently beaten, the likes of Aston Villa, Newcastle, etc., like who are like on a roll. But when we get up to games like Burnley and Luton, something just odd happens. We just tend to draw them. But these easily winnable games, they just don't seem to exist. Like all games, in my personal opinion, should be winnable. But when we like get up to these things, and like this is a must win, we must win this, we tend not to. But then we get to a real bigger club, and for some reason, I had absolutely no confidence going into Newcastle away, and somehow we won that. It's just weird being a Forest fan with these games coming up.
I think the word is complacency there, to be honest. That's how every fan has seen it. Let's talk about West Ham a little bit. So they've not won in five games. They've drawn three, lost two, lost 6-0 and 3-0 in their last two games against Man United and Arsenal, respectively. They did have no Lucas Paqueta or Mikel Antonio. And they've real a lack of real depth at West Ham. Similar run before when we last met, where they were on a bit of a drab spell, and then Charity FC rolled in, as they do into London Stadium, or the Taxpayer Stadium, as Christian likes to call it. Matt, what's your off the cuff opinion as a whole going into this game? And to quote Elliot, is it a must win?
I think I said in the pub about 4:45 on Saturday night, I thought they needed to win one of the two home games against either Newcastle or against West Ham. I don't want to say must win in Feb, but it would go a long way to settling a few things and probably putting us on the right track. I watched West Ham on Sunday. I thought they looked broken. I thought they looked. I would dare I say it. I thought defensively they looked worse than we do, and that says a lot. I think they concede a few goals. I think they've always got, particularly Jared Bowen, they've always got a threat and outlet. So I think that's something that Forrest will be wary of. But I think it's. I know it's a footballing cliche. I don't want to see like I'm saying things for the sake of it. But from our point of view, to get the crowd up and get confidence going, I think if we can get the first goal, I think we can beat them. But we've got to stop giving teams a goal head start, because you're playing with a handicap, and it's just you're putting yourself at a disadvantage, obviously. So I think if we can score the first goal on Saturday, I think we could beat them. And then hopefully that'll kind of set the precedent for difficult games away at Villa and then at home to Liverpool. But yeah, I think it's a game that they really need to win.
Elliot?
All I can say to that is I watched the West Ham Arsenal game. Now compare that to where we lost 2-1 to Arsenal, and it was an absolute disaster. But like going down 6-0, I would say West Ham are bad, but like Arsenal just seemed to be absolutely amazing as well at the same time. So West Ham will come into this game with and targeting the win. Every single team does that. I'm sorry to be blunt, but that's what they do. But the thing is, at the same time, I'm not going to say it's a must-win game, but it's sort of a must-not-lose, because morale will just be sort of on the floor for ages. So my take on this is let's all just get behind the team, just like really sort of roar them on, because something seems odd at the City Ground this season. We don't have that survival spirit that we had last season, and like Luton seems to have it this season. I think we need to bring that back and just roar them on again. And if we do that, I think we're capable of beating anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the atmosphere against Newcastle was largely improved. I don't know if
the issue as well, Newcastle was really good as well, so we really had to like ramp up the noise. So I agree.
I think something that kind of like plays into our hands is West Ham fans from one week to another either hate David Moyes or they absolutely love him. So I kind of think they probably think, well, if Forest beat us, that gives us one step closer to David Moyes leaving. So they might not really want to get behind their team too much, because they kind of don't want him anymore. But I mean, if a bloke gave me European football 3 years on the trot and won a title, then I'd be bloody lauding him. He'd be having a statue outside City Ground.
I think the way I look at it on Saturday is I think Saturday is a bit of a window of opportunity, because I'm right in saying Luton play Man United on Sunday at 1 o'clock, and Sheffield United play Brighton at 1, and then Luton Man United at 4, I believe. So if Forest can go out, do the business, get 3 points on the board, that would be a massive win. That would what give us? Am I right in saying that would give us a 5-point gap before the rest have played?
Yes,
give or take.
And that would assert some pressure on everybody below us. So I think, similar to, I know obviously they didn't take that opportunity on Saturday, but I think Saturday afternoon is another window opportunity to assert some pressure, and it's all about confidence and all about kind of having cohesion and, like I said, that consistency in the team and getting players on the score sheet and just getting the whole place feeling good again. Because I think I thought Saturday night was, I thought the ground was full of hope and optimism. I'm not sure it was like dead as people are making it out to be, but obviously I think people are rightfully anxious at the moment because the desperation to win is so prominent.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I quite like what I've seen from Nuno so far with his team. We go after teams, we attack with the I think, I don't know how many times that front four has been able to play together this season, but it looks pretty good. It looked good on Saturday. I thought that we created plenty of chances. Did we miss some chances? Absolutely, but I'd rather be creating them than having to take one or two, because that's all you're going to get, like we were a lot of the time under Cooper, unfortunately. But going into the game as an approach, guys, Elliot, let's start with yourself. Do you think we go about it the same, play 4-2-3-1, kind of go after West Ham and really attack them, or would you? I've listened to the Forest Focus podcast. I listened to most of the other Forest ones, to be fair, to hear different opinions. But I think some people have suggested that maybe we try and kind of go back into our shell a little bit almost. Do you agree with that?
Nearly. I would say, obviously, of course, don't go like all out attack, because you know what, obviously, of course, what happens like defensive wise. But it's just basically, like I said before, this some of this attacking play that we do is absolutely excellent. And I just wish we'd do it more. I mean, the start video, you know, the pre-game video, you hear Brian Clough go, you know, that little football. They had it more than we did, and on our pitch, that's sacrilege. Now, we didn't have the ball for ages under Steve Cooper, but with Nuno, it just seems we are getting more of the ball, and it's just a case of, you know, just be braver on the ball. That's all we kind of want from our team. Yeah, if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, but just be brave.
That's fair enough, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just echo that, really. Well, I think I've gone into games now, I think particularly under Nuno, well, obviously kiss of death, and I'm sure you could probably clip this up, Wilco, to come back on me. But I think I'll go into it. It's just, I think my biggest concern going to games now is inability to keep the ball out of the back of the net and to be able to defend adequately. Because this is a big comment to make, but I would be amazed if we don't score on Saturday. I think we'll score. I just think it's a case of whether we don't get beat 3-2 again. That's the question. That's really in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, West Ham did beat us 3-2 last time, and that's like the cursed scoreline this season. Yeah. But it's funny because the last few games that we've had, we're not getting carved open by opposition. Yes, we made a mistake against Arsenal for the second one. The first one's an absolute blunder. But the last three goals we've let in have been individual errors and set pieces. Like, we're not getting carved open defensively. We're actually quite sound in open play. Bar Bruno Guimaraes taking a pop shot from the edge of the box after Langer gives it away, and Dan Burn performs a human screen on Nico Dominguez. So I'm optimistic, but kind of what you guys say kind of goes into the lineups, because I will put it up, and I should have put my own name on this because we've all gone for the same thing, to be honest. No, it's not Matt Elliott from Leicester, if anyone's watching.
That's an Elliott.
For the audio listeners, all three of us, really. The team that we'd like to see is Matt Sells in goal, Nico Williams at right back, Moussa Niakate and Murillo at centre half, Ola Aina back from AFCON, unfortunately, a silver medal there for him at left back. AFCON winner. Well, we got one of them now, as well as a World Cup winner. Abraham Sangare coming back in with Nico Dominguez, Anthony Langer, Gibbs White, Hudson-Odoi, and Taiwo Awoniyi up top. Elliot, let's start with yourself.
Okay.
I've spoke with Reece, Christian, and Lee in our chat, And Reece seems to think that Alaina and Ibrahim Sangare won't come back in straight away. Why do you think they will?
I'm not saying they will, but it's just a case of fullback. You've got like Montiel currently injured. Tavares for me is not convincing. I'm sorry. I really want him to do well, but there are times where I'm just like, why the hell did we sign that guy? But there's is also the case of Aina just before Steve Cooper went a bit downhill. Aina was going to be our potential player of the season. And the reason I've also gone with those two fullbacks, Williams and Aina, is because sometimes Williams can play on the left like he does for his club and at Liverpool at home last season. Not everyone forgot that Williams played left back at Liverpool at home last season and was very, very good there. So we can always chop and change them. Regarding Sangare, it's basically because he didn't really get much minutes at AFCON. And I think we just need that like big, strong number six to basically take down West Ham's midfield, really.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You win? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I mean, Sangare did get in. He got a knock because Sadio Mane nearly broke his leg, but he seemed all right. He came on in the last 10 minutes in the final and did his defensive part. Matt, Sangare comes straight back in for you for Ryan Yates, who I've gave a lot of flack to the last couple of weeks, and it was obviously he's always the big debate online. But why do you think Sangare replaces him?
I just think we need, similar to what Elliot said, I just think we just need that presence back in midfield. And I think Sangare can do everything that Ryan Yates can do, and is technically better in terms of being decisive. I think my thing with Yates is he's very good at what he does, but he's very one-dimensional. I think Sangare is kind of a bit more kind of what am I looking for? He can pick a pass.
He's
technical. Yeah, absolutely. Whether they will or they won't, I think. Yeah, did you say it was Christian who said he'd be amazed if they came straight back in?
Reece did.
I probably agree with that because there's lots to mitigate against in terms of with the travelling. Obviously, they've Ivory Coast have all been, I know obviously Olaranya was on the losing side, but particularly with Sangare, they had the big party at Ivory Coast, didn't they? So there's that. Obviously, getting back into the UK, getting back to Wilfred Lane and training. So I think I've put that team more of what I would like rather than what I think will happen. I still probably get a feeling he'll probably play Tavares at left back. It's interesting when you know Tavares. I think and I said the same against Brentford, and I said the same on Saturday. Over a duration of 90 minutes, he does lots of good things, but he also equals that with doing some pretty poor things as well. I mean, there was two or three occasions in that first half where he literally, his marooning runs forward, he literally takes three or four players out the game to get us further up the park. It's a final ball thing with him. Probably a lack of discipline. That shot in front of the Trent 10 was infuriating, wasn't it? It was just a proper have-it moment.
What do you think of Bournemouth as well when he tried to shoot from like 40 yards? What were your twos?
I mean,
just like that.
I think Reece described it as it was nearly in the channel at Bournemouth. He's done that a few times. I mean, but then again, like we've said this on the pod, he's very, very hit and miss, because on Saturday he gets to the byline after a really good ball from Awoniyi, and actually has some composure to get his head up and put the ball on the plate for Gibbs White, and unfortunately Gibbs White just misses the far corner.
Should have scored.
He's got it in the locker, and he's very much a bit like a Jed Spence in terms of, like you say, Matt. He can roll forward and get, when he opens his legs, he's quite a quick player. He's just very, very, indecisive and a bit erratic.
I've got a weird fact about balls going in the channel, by the way, if you want to hear it, or should we do it later?
Why not? We can always have a
all right. Well, I'm always doing it on Rad's vlog. So, but there's an under-19s team in Aberdeen. I forget their name, but one of their players missed a ball so badly that it ended up in the north of Norway.
Right. Okay.
On the coast, how they found out
right near the sea, don't they? So
they found it on the beach, and it had the football team's name on it. So the guy rang up. I'll probably have to like send you a link or something. But yeah, it's a true story. Someone missed a ball so badly that it ended up in the north of Norway from Scotland. But...
If you're bringing these types of facts to the podcast, you can come on more.
It's football channel.
what I was going to say is, Tavares, very, very, very hit and miss. I think Nico Williams is almost kind of like, it'd be very harsh on Nico Williams to lose that right back spot. But I also wouldn't be surprised Ada to come there and Tavares to stay at left back, because I feel like balance and Nuno seems to quite like Nuno Tavares. So that's an interesting one. But how important do you think them three, because I include Bolly in this, how important do you think them three are to the rest of the season as well? I'll start with you, Elliot.
Ridiculously important. Obviously, of course, we know Joe Worrell and Scott McKenna doesn't work. But we have also, bear in mind, got Felipe in as well. You just sort of wish that the dude was in his prime. Like, you imagine if we went down with Felipe in the championship, we'd barely let any goals in. That's how like awesome he would be. But yeah, Bolly is excellent with his aerial presence. It's just a shame that he's just like the wrong side of 30, and his legs have sort of gone. But it was just incredibly harsh, Bournemouth, the way he got a red card like that. Like, Bournemouth are a very weird team. They seem to beat us in just unusual events. Like last year, of course, we were very naive gelling the team. That penalty decision regarding Sam Surridge, they seem to beat us in weird ways, the Bournemouth.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think it's where it might come. History hopefully might repeat itself. So I didn't go against Bristol City. I listened to it on Radio Nottingham, but by my understanding, I think Felipe got better as the game wore on and kind of fitter and sharper. So I think at the moment, particularly in the centre half partnership, is that they're crying out for some leadership and some experience. And I do wonder at certain times, of course, he's not going to start every game, but I do wonder whether Felipe is going to still be a use to us with that experience at some points this season. Because I think particularly Murillo and Omodomabele are very technically good in terms of the ball playing centre halves. Niakate is maybe a bit more gangly, but he kind of gets his head on everything. He's useful with a long throw. But I think that the counteract to that is between the three of them, they haven't got like massive, because they're all pretty young players. So none of them have got like massive amounts of experience, particularly at a top level. And I think Felipe's obviously got that with Atletico Madrid and then us at the back end of last season. So there'd be times this season where I'd be tempted to throw him in, particularly if we go to if he reverts back to a back five with the two wing backs and three centre halves, then maybe play Felipe as one of those two centre halves and have over Murillo and Niakate, or Murillo and Omodomabele, so that way you've got like two players, two centre halves, pretty quick on their feet, and you've got that experience as well. So I don't know whether that might come into his thinking at some point later on in the season.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because Bolly is so aerially like dominant, like it's quite clear. I mean, you can't miss his big head, can you?
No.
So, like, and to be fair, I think he's been another shout for one of our player of the seasons, especially early on. I thought he's been absolutely brilliant, Willy Bolly. So, and I think because he can speak probably Portuguese, because he's come from, he come from Porto. I think like him next to Murillo is also quite valuable. Obviously Felipe's got that connection with Murillo as well. But then there's also been a shout for maybe take Murillo out the fire line a little bit. But I think overall, we reiterate this: we're okay in open play. It's just aerial battle. Like we need maybe a few step ladders in the penalty box or something or whatever. I don't know, but just head and kick it and mark a man, for goodness. I hate zonal marking, by the way, guys. It's
remember Alan Hansen on Match of the Day always used to hate zonal marking. I'm like, why do you still do it? Like,
I know, it's bloody rubbish. But yes, we're going to look at the other games over the weekend. So Luton are at home to Man United. Everton are playing Palace at home. Burnley against Arsenal. Brentford against Liverpool. Fulham against Villa. And Liverpool against Luton in midweek as well. It's not their game in hand because they don't play the week after, weirdly enough, Luton. But definitely a chance to them lose more games and hopefully that morale go a bit down. Although I can't see it happening. But do you see us gaining, getting any breathing room against any of those sides, chaps? Matt, start with you first.
So, Walker, do you mean with regarding to whether we can win on Saturday and get that breathing space, or just winning against those teams? Well, I think that if results go how you'd like to think they should, I know the Premier League's not always like that, then I think that there's a possibility of maybe ending the weekend with some form of breathing space. I think what's going to be interesting now from Luton's point of view, now everybody on the coupon, as I call it, on the football better coupon, everybody would have had Luton to beat Sheffield United on Saturday, and they didn't, and that obviously would have foreseen that as a bit of a setback. Now I'm not saying that's going to kill them, they're gone, but it will be interesting to see how they kind of react to that, because I think that was quite a big setback for them, because that was a real chance to kind of push on. I still think Sheffield United and Burnley are probably gone, albeit Sheffield United got a great result. I think with Sheffield United, I think they have one really good result, and then they go through situations where they'll lose the next five games. So I still think Luton, of course, Everton are most likely challengers. I just want us to win on Saturday, and then, like I said, everybody else. I think that's the benefit of playing first on Saturday, as well as if we can get our business done. Clubs, fans of other clubs and clubs itself, Luton will be thinking, looking at Forest, thinking they got a good result. We need to go out and do the business, and we've got a tough game. And Everton, I'm right in saying Everton play Palace on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I think I don't know when it is, but Everton are at home to Palace, which is a big, massive game because I think Palace are right in it as well.
Yeah,
to be honest. 100%.
I watched them. I watched them against Chelsea on Monday night. They were poor. I thought Palace were really poor. Just for a balanced view as well, probably similar to us in a lot of ways. They've got a lot of key players missing, Elise and Palace. But yeah, I thought they looked pretty rudderless the other night.
I mean, no Gerhi, Decore out for the season, no Eze, Elise, who are like their four best players. It's a bit bleak as a Palace supporter. But Elliot, Luton are playing Man United at home, and I think we can kind of count our lucky stars a little bit that Man United are in a bit of form. Beat Villa, beat Wolves, they beat West Ham. So I think with Luton they're playing. Do you know when they play against teams where they think, oh, we could beat them?
Yes.
And they get the Forest-itis where they get complacent and lose or draw.
All right. Yeah. For one thing, a former captain of ours, which I hope doesn't actually watch this, but I heavily, heavily backed him until what happened at Luton, which cost us 2 points, to be honest. After that, I just thought, why the hell are you still getting picked, to be honest? But those 2 points could have been very, very valuable right now. But like I say, you've got to bear in mind that Luton do have that survival spirit that we had last season. Everyone thought we were just down by Christmas. Everyone thought the same about Luton. And surprisingly, they got over 11 points. I believe it was November, was it? Maybe October?
I think so, yeah.
Naturally, they're doing much better than the other two sides down there. But once again, we have to just suggest that this is on ourselves. I just want none of this. All the three teams below us are better. This is actually on us. And that's right. West Ham win would help big time with just the morale in general. Like I said, I'm not going to say I'll be satisfied once we're safe. Get us over the line, I'm happy.
Walker, I'll ask the question to you. What's your thoughts on FFA?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because without being a financial expert or connoisseur or whatever, it's difficult. But having spoken to like Everton fans that I know from local, like locally and stuff, they seem to think like we won't get as much of a punishment as people seem to suggest. Because the way I look at it is, if we could have sold Brennan Johnson for £30 million to Brentford, and if the story is true, we would have been fine. Whether Brennan Johnson would have gone to Brentford is a whole different matter as well anyway, because it doesn't, just because you accept an offer doesn't mean the player is going to go there. For me, it's a funny one, because for 2 months of the season, where 2 months of the window is still left to go, and then that is now closed shop, and then we've sold him for £17.5 million. It's all a bit very like up in the air, but I'm understanding that every team agrees to that deadline.
Yeah.
I think so it's a strange one, but I also wouldn't. I don't understand why the club would then get in one of the best sports lawyers in Nick DeMarco in to come and fight the case if they didn't think they had one, and he doesn't tend to take on cases if he doesn't think he can win either. That is literally the writing in the pudding, as you want to call it, or whatever. So for me, I think we've got a case, but whether I still. We have broken the rules, essentially. They're there to be followed, etc. But I also think there's a big, massive bias against clubs that aren't in the top six. And the Premier League want to protect their assets, essentially, because they're what brings the money in, like your Man United's, Liverpool's, Man City's, Chelsea's, etc. They're not going to be bothered about Little Nottingham Forest or Everton, as Richard Masters called us in court or whatever it was. So it's a very, very interesting one. Because I think even if we didn't get a punishment as such, what's stopping Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United appealing and saying, well, hang on, Forest got an unfair advantage. Well, actually, we sold one of our better players. So I don't understand that.
I think for me now, it's all about precedence. I think, and this might be quite unpopular, obviously, because I know Everton know the outcome of their appeal for their first deduction. I think it's at some point next week. I think in terms of precedence being set, I think we need Everton to get points back, because I think if Everton gets points back, I think the severity of our punishment will be lesser, because I think that because of just how the logistics and the circumstances surrounding it play out. And I'm a big believer in precedence in life, and I think that it'll be I think if they can get 4, 5, 6 points back, I think that might minimalise. I've never thought it'll be 10 points, but like I said, hopefully if Everton can kind of overturn their appeal, that might kind of give Forest more ammo with their case to hopefully to minimalise any impending punishment.
Yeah, I think Everton will get points back, which is also a kick in the teeth for ourselves, because they're in the battle with us.
Yeah.
But I also fully believe that something will click for us defensively, and the attack obviously will take care of itself, and we will start winning games. I do truly believe that. I think we'll beat West Ham on Saturday. I also think we've got enough to pick up results away from home as well. I think we do look a lot better in a lot of areas. It's just something that thing's got to click into gear, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've also got our main dominant force back in Taiwo Awoniyi. Think about how many points he won for us last season. Like when he stays fit, you know, I feel he's just as good as like a Darwin, Nunes, etc. There's not many number nines in the world that are better than him, really. So now we've got Taiwo back, you know, he'll just give him the ball and he will potentially score and get points for us.
I did see some humane thing off Taiwo, where he actually got bodied off the ball by Sven Botman on Saturday. It's not very often he gets beaten in a strength battle. But let's finish it off, guys. Elliot, I'll start with you. What is your prediction for the West Ham game?
This is one of those that could go either way. Ideally, I'd want it to be 3-1, but I think it'll actually be... I think it'll actually be 2-1, but they're going to get a goal from like an odd set piece that the referee shouldn't have given away.
Right, fair enough. Controversial, basically.
Yeah.
Matt?
5-4 Forest.
Why not? Why not?
Did you listen to the pod at the weekend where I said 5-3?
That was brilliant. We love that. That's
peak Barclays. It's funny because Lee knows the referee for Saturday is Thomas Bramall. I said to Lee, just send him a message. We play in red. Just whistle every time one of ours goes down, please.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, Lee thinks he's quite a good ref. So we'll see come Sunday when we absolutely slag him to the hills when he doesn't give us a penalty either or something. I'm sure about it. But chaps, it's been lovely to have you both on the Red Side of the Trent. Is there anything you want to plug, Elliot? I'll start with yourself.
I do comedy improvisation with the local Nottingham improv troupe, which is Miss Imp. We play all sorts of weird improvised games like you see on Whose Line Is It Anyway. Tomorrow I'm going to be hosting the workshop at the Malt Cross in Nottingham, and it's completely suitable for beginners. If you'd fancy just coming along and giving it a go, it's only £5 to get in, and if you just want to watch, that's absolutely fine as well. Just be nice to us, because you know we need the laughable energy.
Is that like a weekly thing, Elliot, if people want to come
down? It's every Thursday. You'll often find me in Block P with just wearing this Back to the Future 2 hat, so if you do see me, just come and say hello. And also the NFFC hashtag is absolutely brilliant. I had mental health struggles 2 weeks ago, and I put something off, and I just want to thank everyone for helping me in a very difficult circumstance, because I lost someone quite dear to me earlier this month, and it was absolutely gutting. But there are loads of places that will help you if you just DM Red Side of the Trent guys. They are absolutely wonderful for your mental health, and they've helped me out in so many ways. And like I say, it's just an honor to be here.
No worries, Elliot. Anytime. I mean, I've definitely been there myself with mental health. Not as much as that of losing someone. So I do. So I'm sorry to hear about that.
But you're also one of my sober brothers as well. So I'm nearly 6 years sober. Yeah.
I'm trying. Matt keeps trying to get tempt me with a beer every now and then. Matt, I didn't see
you need it supporting Forest.
I know. Yeah, Matt, I didn't see you at Bournemouth. What happened? Yeah, there's about a thousand people there.
I got in so late. It was like it was about 5 minutes to, and then basically it was an early morning game, so I'd had God, you boys put me to shame. You do with your sober personalities, which to be fair, but to
both there's a reason I don't. I'm terrible with alcohol.
Obviously it was a Sunday game, and obviously for me it's a long train journey. It's about just shy of 3 hours. I took some bottles for some Sunday morning consumption. And by the time I got to Bournemouth, I'd obviously had maybe 4 or 5 bottles. And I thought, before kickoff, I need to go and get a Domino's, something doughy, something to eat, because otherwise they're not gonna let me in the ground. That's my and then I ended up getting into an Uber and getting into the ground at 5 minutes to kick off. But yeah, you know me, Wilco, I'm always about in the town, within the vicinity of kickoff. But yeah, no, my plugs are not half as meaningful as Elliot's. And Elliot, just want to wish you all the best with regard to your mental health as well.
Well, that's very kind of you. Yeah. If I do have the odd sort of twitchy stuff, it's because I have Asperger's syndrome. So if I am rolling my eyes or something, you know,
it's fine.
I'm such an awkward guy.
I think we all are, to be honest with you. I think it's half the people that are close to me say I've got very weird ways. So we've all got them, mate.
Do you want one final fact before we go?
Oh yeah, 100%.
There are 9 hammocks on the moon.
9 hammocks on the moon.
On the moon, yeah. They were left there by the last Apollo mission. There's quite a number of things on the moon, but the most unique thing is hammocks. They don't have any trees, but they were left there by the last Apollo mission because they had to sleep. And I'm usually on Brad's vlog as well, just telling him this nonsense.
Some conspiracy theorists will say we've never been to the moon, but we'll leave that for another another pod to discuss that.
This is a football channel.
Matt, I've not seen you slag off the England cricket team. Are they actually doing all right this season against India?
Tomorrow morning.
All right.
Follow me on social media for all of the ball to ball coverage of the third test in Ratchet.
Definitely. Well, if anyone doesn't know Matt as at City Ground Shelf on Forest, then I'll be bloody surprised, because you're here, there, and everywhere. You get a lot of love, so you're doing good stuff there, mate. But thank you very much for joining us on Red Side of Trent. We'll see you in the next one when we review the West Ham game, hopefully with a win to discuss. That would be very nice. Come on, you Reds.
This podcast is proud to be part of the Talk Sport Fan Network. Talk Sport, powered by fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.